Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. Two for one, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Songhai Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. QT and Songhai with you as usual. Real quick before we jump back into things, if you're looking for some wrestling in the next couple of days, WCWO tonight in Indianapolis, Indiana. There is a hot sauce festival featuring some professional wrestling in Portland, Oregon. RCCW in Hazel Green, Alabama. Freelance in Chicago, Illinois. FGW featuring Brutal Bob Evans and Tough Tim Hughes in Hamilton, Ohio. Tomorrow night, Northwest Pro, where you can find me in Vaughan, Washington. There is pro wrestling at the Tattoo Festival in Seattle, Washington. 5CC Wrestling making their debut in Bellingham, Washington. PWA in Oxford, Mississippi. Lucha Libre Portland in Portland, Oregon. And IPW in Harrington, Delaware tomorrow night. Now, our next guest, he is continuing on here with Russian Month for us. He will be at East Bay Pro Wrestling next week on the 24th and ACW 7th of September. Alexis Direko, welcome to the show.
Comrades, you're very welcome for having me.
Now, since it is your first time on our show, we're going to start you out with the traditional first-timer's question. What led to you getting into the professional wrestling industry?
Always a fan. My grandfather, God rest his soul, was a huge wrestling fan from the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, up until he passed away in the 80s. growing up, as a young kid living in Sacramento, California, we used to go to Don Owens' tapings at Channel 40, which then was the original big-time wrestling out of San Francisco. So I was always a fan. And in 1998, my good friend Josh Edlow, who is the promoter for the Rebirth SWF in Sacramento, and I found a school ran by Sir Paul DeMarco, and old school Oliver John was a trainer there, and that's how my wrestling career started.
Now you talk about Don Owens, and we're up here in the Pacific Northwest.
What did I say? Don Owens, or I meant Roy Shire.
Roy Shire, okay. Roy Shire,
yeah,
shared a lot of talent with Don Owens. So you're familiar with a lot of people that were up here, guys like Buddy Rose and Ed Wiskowski and that ilk that used to come down to San Francisco from Portland.
They used to, once a year. Well, now that was the thing, is once a year they used to do a TV swap, and Portland wrestling would be on the big time wrestling like show. So it'd be like a tape from, you know, Portland or Eugene or whatever, and they would show it down here once a year, and it was like a big special.
And when you see guys like that on TV, and Portland had a lot of legendary talent, as did San Francisco, like we talked about, they shared a lot of talent. Do you think that the territories here on the West Coast are as respected as territories in other parts of the country? It seems like a lot of fans, when you talk nationwide and internationally, don't really talk about San Francisco and Portland as much as they do, say, the AWA or World Class or as some of the other Indo-Gay territories. Do you think that's a fair assessment of where the fans see the promotions here on the West Coast?
In that era, in the 70s, 60s, 70s, and early part of the 80s, I think probably a lot of territories weren't known about. I think if you kind of fast forward to now, I would say that Don Owens and Roy Shire are probably two of the most respected and feared men in one wording at the same time. I've never heard a promoter, or I've never heard an old wrestler, and I was lucky enough that I was raised up with the guys like the Tonga Kid and Rikishi and Greg Valentine and Jimmy Snuka, who was a good friend. I've never heard them once say a bad word about Don Owens or Roy Shire, because one, they always got paid, and two, they knew not to mess with them. There's that old story about with Piper. Piper saying he wouldn't work Portland for WWF because of Roy Shire. Because of Don Owens. So, I think the boys, the talent, respected him, and even to go down to Judo Gene LaBelle down in LA, they all respected him. And those guys, they just didn't. I just don't think they got the love because, you could be. To drive from, let's say, Portland to Los Angeles is like driving from New York to Miami. Well, there's two states on the West Coast, and there's, 13 on the East Coast. So,
one of the aspects in professional wrestling you've sort of gravitated to, as well as the in-ring, is promoting. Being a promoter is a very tough, often thankless job. What is it about the promoting end that has attracted you within the wrestling industry?
I'm stupid. Hold on. One second here. It becomes one of those things where, for me, it was, it became one of the, really from the start of my career, I was with a touring company, and I'm talking from my first match, somebody said to me, oh, what do you think we should do for the main event? I was like, it's my first match. What are you asking me for? And it was a show ran by guys who had been in the business for, at that point in 1998, probably 25 years. So I've sort of always, since the day I started in the business, have been a wrestler, or a promoter or a booker or whatever you want to call it. And I like the creative side of putting the shows together or putting the cards together or, it's just one of those things where glutton for punishment, but I like the creative side of things.
Fair enough. One of the things that has changed wrestling in the last 15 years or so is social media. It's become very important as far as promoting not only wrestling companies, individual wrestlers, trying to get their names out there. It has really changed the landscape of independent wrestling, both positively and negatively. What do you think, in general, social media has done for the wrestling in your area?
I firmly believe that the social media, especially in Northern California, is what has bred the growth of many of the popular promotions here on in this area. You know, you have promotions that, I mean, I'll take Hood Slam, for example, was Hood Slam was a silly, was a, and I'm going to use this, probably keep for saying it was a silly idea, but in a good way. And, you know, I don't even remember what the first show was, but I want to say there might have been 50 fans, and it was free to get in. Now, I think policy at Hood Slam is not to say a number, but now they have sellouts four weeks, you know, or 4 or 5 weeks a month, depending on how many Fridays there are. And that was all done through social media. There was no budget 9.5 years ago to even advertise. I think there was flyers. I don't remember. I think it was all word of mouth the first 5 or 6 shows. You know, and then you have...
Go ahead.
Oh, and then, you know, you have a company that I work very closely with called East Bay Pro Wrestling. When that company started, 45. Now, they have a studio, so they can only fit about, probably 135 people in their building. But they have 135 people sellouts 2 to 3 times a month, you know. So, and that's, their social media presence is insane because they've got 25 students that are training and 7 or 8 that are on shows. So, for them, it's every time I turn on Facebook that or Twitter or Instagram, I'm seeing a post about those. So it's really helped those. And there's other promotions, too, that have really grown from the social media aspect over the last however many years.
Bringing up Hood Slam, they have grown huge in the last few years, starting as almost a novelty for a very niche crowd. They've evolved into one of the larger independent companies on the West Coast. Up here in Seattle, 321 was more or less an offshoot of Hood Slam, and 321 has since grown into one of the bigger companies in the Pacific Northwest, just like Hood Slam grew in California. What do you think it is about groups like Hood Slam and 321 that evolved from a really niche product that weren't necessarily catering towards traditional wrestling fans into something that's become popular mainstream with wrestling fans?
Hood Slam was started because it was sort of started for the boys. It was a little bit of a backstory. I don't even know. Well, I don't really care. I don't work for the company anymore. But that really all started about a year or two before. We were doing these Lucha Libre shows that we all hated because, you know, it was Lucha Libre, and let's just face it, not very good. And we were all just being funny characters. Like I remember Perry Von Vicious was, I think he was Perry Von Warrior. And Levi Shapiro wore the Viano mask, and he was like Viano Shapiro. We were just being silly. Because it was outdoor Lucha Libre shows in the middle of summer. A few years later, the Hood Slam idea came about, and the first run of shows, which I think were about 5 or 6 in the first year, I was in a group that was called the DEA, and we were trying to shut the company down because of the pot. You know, so we had, it was just something that the boys were kind of doing for fun. You know, I think Johnny Butabi and myself where I, 2010 on the verge of quitting the business because we hated how boring and political it was. Which then sort of lit a fire under people. So when the crowd started getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to what they are now, I mean, I always say any show that has Slam after their name that started after 2010, all should be paying Sheik, the creator of Hood Slam, a percentage of their gates, because they're just feeling off of the stuff that he came up with. This is no offense to the 3-2-1 guys, but I mean, let's face it, they are a complete ripoff of Hood Slam. It's nothing against them, but I think they'll admit it. They've even had some characters that are sort of ripoffs of Hood Slam. You know, but then there's other companies, and for Hood Slam, a bit niche is sort of an understatement because nobody was doing that. Nobody started doing, you know, character-themed shows until Hood Slam was doing it. So, you know, for the popularity of, and maybe, you know, I know like PWG would have like funny named shows, like they'd have Kurt Russell Mania and things like that, but they, you know, I don't even know if Kurt Russell was at those shows, you know, so, but Hood Slam was the one that sort of started that genre of let's have some fun again in the last basically 10 years.
Now, I've noticed in your career, you have done a lot of tag team wrestling in addition to singles wrestling. Tag teaming is a different type of wrestling. There's a different strategy involved, different mindset. Do you find yourself having a preference for either one or the other?
I would say at different parts of my career, I wanted to do both, but singles and tag. I think there was a time, like the time that I did tag, where Sheik and I were a tag team, I would say that we were probably the best tag team around because we never once talked to each other in the ring. It was a look, a feel. We just knew what to do. We had fun, but all good things come to an end, and we did a good singles run when we broke up. Sasha and I, we had a good tag run together as brothers. But then when it was time for him to go be singles, it was time for him to go be singles. I tagged with another guy named Leon Akuza sort of a couple years ago. Leon's a very old friend, and I really enjoyed our tag team together. I think we were, we got a little too over for the companies, and they didn't want us to tag anymore. That was something I would have enjoyed to continue, but it didn't happen. And he's been in two tag teams since then, so we'll just kind of leave that at that. But there were times where I had good runs in singles, you know. Most of my career was, well, I don't know, a good chunk of my career was spent wrestling singles matches. And, you know, so it's one of those, I mean, I don't need a tag partner to get over and never have. Just like I'm one of those guys, I say it all the time, I never needed to be your champion or a champion to be the guy who's going to draw your money. If you look at it any way, shape, or form, your company's drew better with me on your shows. Whether I was a tag or singles.
One of the other aspects of wrestling that has been controversial over the last few years is deathmatch wrestling. We see a lot of death match only promotions pop up. Some run one or two matches like that periodically. Some on every show, there's at least one. A lot of people don't like it. What's your stance on deathmatch wrestling?
I hate it. It's not wrestling. It is, I find it, you know, those people that hate intergender wrestling. Well, I hate deathmatch wrestling the way they hate intergender. I think a good blow off match that, ends in a good blood feud, great. I'm an old school NWA territory booker, or at least I try to do my best. But I hate the stupid light tubes, barbed wire, blow up the ring matches. Just, it's garbage.
Now, outside of death matches, professional wrestling can be a dangerous sport. Lots of injuries happen. Sometimes fans get very riled up and things get tense. There's all kinds of scary moments that happen. What would you say is the scariest moment you've lived through within wrestling?
Like, injury-wise or, like, from a fan?
Either way, just the thing that scared you the most.
There used to be this awful wrestler named Warpath who no one ever told him what this business was about or about being safe, and he gave me a chokeslam one time, and I felt everything from my chin down go numb for about a good 5 minutes. I thought, well, I'm 21 years old, and I'm never going to walk again.
That is a scary day at the office for sure. Now, wrestling also is a big cardio-based sport. It takes a lot of endurance and a lot of stamina to get through matches. Some wrestlers don't tend to go more than a handful of minutes, either based on style or based on conditioning. Some people like to get in there and go for as long as they possibly can every match. What would you say has been the longest match that you've had so far?
My longest match was 55 minutes, something like that. I know it was a DMW championship match, and Johnny Butabi was the champion. I was the challenger, and I believe Sheik was also in the match. Johnny and I had a long feud, so I can't quite remember, but I'm pretty sure that was the three of us, and I think they went the full hour with Johnny retaining, but I think I got eliminated in the 55 minutes or something like that. I know it was a kind of a boom boom finish, but two of us were eliminated right away or at the very end.
Another thing I have noticed in a lot of locker rooms in my career is that some wrestlers have specific tape rituals that they do. Some people have to apply the tape in a certain way. Some people are very particular about the type of tape they use. Some people write things on their tape. Do you have any tape rituals that you've employed over your career?
No, I that was never, ever, as long as my wrists were okay, I didn't give a shit.
Fair enough. Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is on the line, and he has some questions as well, so I'm going to pass you over to QT for a bit.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Alexis.
Hello.
Alexis, my wrestling sources in Shelton, Washington, have informed me that you went to Cordova High School in the city of Sacramento and that your school colors were red, black, and white, and your mascot was a lancer. Are my sources in Shelton, Washington correct?
Almost. The school is in Rancho Cordova, California. It's a city next to Sacramento.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now, I'm going to take it Ed, for granted that you were under a Russian exchange program, and if you were, is your home city the city of Minsk?
Minsk. No, I was born in St. Petersburg.
Oh, okay. St. Petersburg. Wasn't that formerly known as Leningrad?
Sure. I didn't live there very long, so I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Alexis, in your teenage years, did you ever travel to the Russian port city of Petropavlovsk?
No. The last time I was in Russia, I was six.
Wow, six. Oh, okay. All right. Now, Alexis, do you yourself have a podcast called Cities of Blood, and what is the percentage of wrestlers that come on the show? Is it about half?
Well, the Cities of Blood podcast is done with my producing partner, Phil DeSaro. I believe Brittany Wonder was on a pilot that never aired. And beyond that, I don't think we ever had any other wrestlers on the first season.
Oh, okay. Now, did Phil DeSaro start this podcast and ask you on from the very start?
Well, Phil is my producing partner. We've produced many shows together, and he wrote a graphic novel that was called Sacramento City of Blood, and it's about 12 of Sacramento's serial killers. Then that sort of spawned the podcast, and from there it kind of morphed into us just doing a semi-weekly crime podcast.
Oh.
I think we did 20 episodes.
Wow. And it mostly had to do with serial killers in the city of Sacramento?
Well, the initial few, three or maybe three, I think, were. But then we moved on to just sort of crimes around the world.
I know we talked
about Oregon's, what was it, the Green River Killer?
Yes, that was the Green River is up here in Washington, and it's kind of river that runs through Kent and Auburn. It's called the Green River.
I know we talked about him on one. I'm probably sure there was more people from Oregon. I just don't quite remember. I've taken a lot of chair shots to the head.
Did you ever talk about the Hillside Strangler, Kenneth Bianchi?
The name sounds familiar.
Yes.
We usually had about three or four subjects a show, so trying to remember 80 subjects is a little hard to do.
Oh, okay. What about the classic serial killer, Ted Bundy?
What's that?
How about the classic serial killer Ted Bundy?
Oh, we definitely talked about him.
Oh, okay. Yes, sadly, he had two killings in a Florida sorority. He went down to, like, the University of Florida, yes, and had two killings.
He was definitely talked about.
Yes. Well, Alexis, I saw your YouTube match with Manny Fabrino entitled EBPW semicolon Manny Fabrino versus Alexis Dravecko, and you could not tell by the video if the referee had checked both wrestlers for foreign objects. The video started at the 000 mark with both wrestlers wrestling. Sometimes I have seen a match where a referee will check one wrestler and forget to check the other. Have you ever had this happen to you? And in your match with Manny Fabrino, did the referee check both of you?
I don't even remember wrestling him, so I have no idea.
Oh. Okay.
You're in a career that's 20, almost 22 years long. I've had 3,000 matches. I don't remember everything, even if it was as recently as wrestling Manny.
Wow, okay. All right. Well, Manny was quite the tall wrestler, kind of built like Jake the Snake Roberts, and he kind of had shoulder-length hair. And, I think it took place in a church, or what was a church. Yes.
I have no idea what you're talking about, to be honest. I have no memory of that. Yeah.
Oh, okay, no problem. Now I know in this match I noticed that on your tights you had the Russian hammering sickle. Is this the symbol of Moscow or the Ukraine? The hammering sickle.
That is the Russian hammer and sickle, their symbol of pride.
Oh, okay.
It was banished many years ago, but President Putin brought it back.
Whoa. Now, do you know why the hammer and sickle was banished? Was it because it was adopted by the Ukraine and the intellectuals in the Ukraine that were ruthlessly persecuted under Stalin? Is that their symbol?
You're asking way too many over-my-head questions.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll just mark that down, research for myself. Okay, very good. Right. Well, Alexis, I know that you don't remember that match. However, at the 1 minute and 24 second mark of the match, Manny gave you a knife edge chop. My question is, what is the hardest knife edge chop you have received, and was it from a woman?
No. The hardest one I ever got was from the late Virgil Flynn, who chopped me so hard that he busted my chest open.
Oh, wow. Holy smokes. Did you have to get stitches in your chest after that?
No, I think we put rubbing alcohol on it, and I went home.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right. Now, Alexis, have you received a knife edge chop in four different Western United States, and would one of them been in Idaho for the Wrestle Club organization?
I wrestled in Idaho one time. I don't remember. I don't think it was a promotion. It was a traveling thing that the guy he ran. The Bigfoot trucks or whatever they're called.
Oh, monster trucks.
Monster truck. Yeah, he was a promoter who did those and pro wrestling at the same time. That was the only time I ever wrestled in Idaho, was I did one of those big arena shows.
Oh, okay. Yes, they had those monster trucks decked out in colorful designs and logos, like Monster Energy Drink, and I think Mountain Dew. They have one, and I know one of the trucks is called the Grave Digger.
I remember Bigfoot being one of them. I don't remember the others.
I'm
remember Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan and the Giant from WCW had one.
Oh, they did. Wow.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Okay. I wonder if Andre the Giant could get the rear end of one of those monster trucks off the ground in a deadlift, Andre the Giant.
He was Andre the Giant. Why couldn't he?
Now, if you could travel back in time and go out drinking with Andre the Giant, say in Las Vegas, and he drank 102 beers, how many could you drink at his peak?
Well, I'm not going to say I could outdrink Andre, but I've drank with Johnny Butabi, so I think we could give Andre a run for his money.
Wow. Holy smokes. Okay. All right. Well, Alexis, at the 3:45 mark of that match, and I know yet you probably don't remember it, however, you took your left foot and put it on the chest of Manny and got a 1.5 count on this pin attempt. My question is, have you ever pinned an opponent like this by using your foot to the chest? And if so, have you called this moment the Iron Boot of Discipline in honor of Colonel Klink, Commandant of Stalag 13?
I'm sure I have beat many people by like that because they usually get knocked out from my friend the Chain. But I'm not sure it ever had a name other than Victory.
Oh, Victory. Okay. All right. Well, Alexis, will you consider a suggestion from Turnbuckle Turmoil the next time you try to pin an opponent with just one boot on his chest that you nickname it the Iron Boot of Discipline?
Deal.
Oh, good. That's very good. And keep in mind that this was the original nickname of Colonel Klink of Stalag 13, who I believe himself could have been a wrestler.
I have no idea what that is, so okay.
Oh, okay, just look up any YouTube videos of Hogan's Heroes. Yes.
Hulk Hogan had a TV show called Hogan's Heroes?
Oh, no, no, there was a comedy in the late 1960s and early 70s called Hogan's Heroes. It was based on a German POW camp.
Oh, I've never heard of it.
Wow. Oh, okay. I'm very excited to assign you this homework assignment of looking up Hogan's Hero.
Oh, I've never done homework a day in my life, so it's probably never going to happen.
Well, that's even more refreshing. We here at Turnbuckle Turmoil often assign wrestlers homework assignments, and to have a wrestler automatic reject one of our homework assignments is a first. You are the first person to automatically reject a homework assignment. I applaud you.
Oh, well, I like to be a first at things.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, Alexis, did you ever go out to any bars with Jimmy Snuka? And if so, did he get into any arm wrestling contests for drinks?
I think when I knew Jimmy, he was a little more mellower, and he kind of just hung out, and he was more relaxed and chilled back when I first met Jimmy 18 or 19 years ago. He was a very chill man.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, Alexis, how well could Jimmy have done, in your opinion, against ravishing Rick Rude, who once placed sixth in the light heavyweight division for the whole United States in the arm wrestling championships in Petaluma, California?
Jimmy was a tough son of a gun, so I would say he probably could hold his own, but I didn't know Rick Rude, so it's hard to say. I know he was a well-built man, So it probably would have been a tie.
Okay, a tie. All right. Well, Alexis, it is considered bad luck in Russia to give your bride an even amount of flowers for a wedding. Grooms always give brides an odd amount of flowers. Even amounts of flowers are usually associated with funerals in Russia. My question is, have you yourself ever used a dozen red roses as a foreign object in the wedding?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, Alexis, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners if you used a Russian folk song as your entrance music?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
No.
Well, then. Oh, okay. Can you tell us what your entrance music is?
I used the Soviet national anthem.
Ah, very good. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, Alexis, if I could I have your permission to read a short passage in the book I am now reading, One Last Ride, The Tale of Cowboy Scott Casey? Could I read a passage from this book for you?
Sure.
Oh, okay. All right. Let me see. This is on page 147. I had some great fans in my day. There were two in particular that stand out who were from the Houston area. These were two sisters, and they were in wheelchairs. They were only 13 or 14 years old, and they were both suffering from spina bifida, which means their spine was growing on the outside of their body rather than underneath the skin. Those two girls loved me. They absolutely adored me. Every time I went to the ring, I'd stop and talk to them, or even sometimes give them a little kiss on the cheek. They were as sweet as could be. Sadly, a few years later, they both died within an hour of each other. They had both told their mom that when they passed, they wanted to be buried in their Scott Casey t-shirt. All these years later, and even thinking about them absolutely killed me. I still want to cry about it. They were going through such a monumentally traumatic thing, and they felt so strongly about me that they wanted to wear my t-shirt as they passed through this life. I had a chance to meet a lot of sick children because of my time in the spotlight. Walk into a room and see all of their faces light up like it was Christmas morning. They'd be so grateful for just a few minutes of your time. Seeing these children fighting terminal cancer and things of that nature really makes you step back and appreciate the little things in life that much more. My question is, do you yourself have a rabid fan base? And at some times, do these fans come to your matches even though they are physically handicapped and overcome a lot of hurdles to do your matches?
I mean, I would say I've had a very loyal fan base that has booed me for years. There's been multiple fans that were wheelchair bound that have been around for years. I can't remember if any young fans or, well, I guess no child fans that I can remember were ever stricken with anything like that. But, you know, we've had fans that have passed away that we've known for a long time, and it's been, it's sad not to have them around anymore.
On the polar opposite, have you ever had any fans that had gotten drunk and tried to rush the ring? And if so, did you give them a Russian clothesline and scoop them out of the ring gently?
No, they were usually taken care of by security before they ever got to me.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. Now, Alexis, besides wrestling and undergoing training for that, are you skilled in the art of boxing? Have you ever had any boxing matches outside the wrestling ring?
I had one boxing match at a wrestling show 3 or 4 years ago. I boxed just as an exercise, nothing for the competition. It was just more of a to keep in shape type thing. So I had a pretty good idea of what to do.
Wow. Now, did you get winded when you were in boxing more than you did in wrestling? Did the boxing match take more wind out of you?
I would say probably yes, because of the there's a lot more movement in boxing than there is in wrestling.
Okay. All right. Have you ever seen the YouTube video of Mr. T boxing Roddy Piper, the boxing match that they had?
And my boxing match was much better.
Is there any YouTube video of you and that boxing match? And if so, what is the title?
I believe so. It would be Alexis Derevko versus what was the guy's name? It's a guy who doesn't even wrestle anymore. So I want to say his name. I honestly can't remember what the guy's name was. He didn't wrestle for very long. He wasn't meant for the business, I don't think. But I'm sure if you just look up Alexis Derevko and boxing, it'll come up.
Whoa. Okay. I will do that. That's good. Okay. All right. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy. And Alexis, I would like to thank you for your outright rejection of a homework assignment. It's the first time this has ever happened on Green Buckle Terminal.
You're very welcome.
Back to you, Sign Guy.
Thank you, 2T. Well, Alexis, being in the business for as long as you have been and being on the wrestling end and the promoting end, I'm sure you've been to a great number of different venues. And as everyone knows, anywhere a promoter can stick a ring, they can run a show, which leads to some odd venues. What is the oddest venue where you've performed?
I would say it's a tie between a Walmart opening and a gas station opening.
Were they in the parking lots of said establishments?
No, the ring was inside the Walmart. the gas station one had like a covered area where I think maybe they would like park RVs or something. Like almost like, you know, when you go to the gas station, it's covered. It was like that, but bigger. And that's where the gas station opening was.
One of the sadder aspects of pro wrestling is a lot of times wrestlers in the day of social media especially get inundated with fans that send them all sorts of strange and bizarre messages. The female wrestlers especially are subject to this type of treatment from fans. It sometimes spills over to live events as well. What do you think of how wrestling generally is able to police the more creepy aspect of this type of behavior from fans, and sadly enough, sometimes from the people within the industry itself?
Well, being a friend with many of the female wrestlers on the West Coast, I have seen some of the messages they have gotten from fans, and those fans shouldn't be allowed at shows anymore, in my opinion. And it's sort of a real disturbing trend that people think they can talk to other people that way.
That 100% agree with you there. Well, we have just a few minutes left in the show today, and I want to give you ample time. So if there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything and everything you would like, social medias, merchandise, appearances, upcoming, your favorite ice cream shop, whatever it is, the floor is all yours.
All right. Well, of course, you want to check out Action Coast Wrestling on all the social media platforms. It is Facebook is Action Coast Empire, or at Action Coast Empire. Twitter is ACW Live, and Instagram is Action Coast Wrestling. Of course, you want to check out East Bay Pro Wrestling as well. It's my sort of a partner company. I'm always off. I believe their Instagram is at East Bay Pro, and their Twitter is at EBPW or EBP Wrestling. So those are those two things. We've got the 24th will be the next East Bay show, and September 7th will be the next Action Coast show. Let's see. I will be at the East Bay show making an appearance. I will be wrestling at the Action Coast show for the first time in quite a few months. What else? You know, follow me on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Alexis Derevko. And so, yeah, you can look up me there.
Well, I want to thank you very much for taking time out of your day to be with us here. We appreciate that greatly, and I want to wish you continued success on all the shows you're doing.
Well, thank you very much. You can check out Action Coast Wrestling on YouTube and watch all our shows.
There we go. So, fans, if you're not familiar, jump on the YouTubes and watch it. I think you will enjoy it. They put out some quality shows. So check that out.
Perfect.
We will be back with you on Sunday afternoon. We have the debut of Rad on Turnbuckle Turmoil. And don't forget, you can find me tomorrow night in Vaughn, Washington at Northwest Pro, bringing Stephen Bonner of the UFC Hall of Fame to the show tomorrow night. So get out there, support your local independents wherever they may be, and we will talk to you soon. I'm ashamed of all my somethings.